Blog Talk Radio.
February 11th, was that day that the Pope officially said he was resigning at the end of this month. And it really was interesting. It was a fascinating thing because made me wonder. Popes don't resign. You know, popes die in their office. You know, they're representatives of Christ, supposedly, in the church. You know, so or Peter. You know, and it was Christ's first apostle. But the Pope. Let me read this, and you'll get an idea of what I'm thinking. The Pope is resigning. I guess that means he's giving up his Christ on Earth job. Two other Pope Benedicts resigned. Now, we know why Ratzinger became Benedict. He was going to be the third Pope to retire before he died on the job. I guess they took the names, you know, that's how they take their names. I mean, he took it because two other Benedicts resigned. Why would anybody take Pope Benedict unless, you know, plan to do something like resign? I guess all of this present Pope past has been just too hard on him, ignoring over 10,000 claims of child molestation against Catholic priests, the theft of millions or even billions from the Vatican Bank, overcoming his Nazi racist past as a Hitler youth to become a cardinal and a pope. One of the first papal acts Benedict performed was giving a private ceremonial blessing to Ferrari automobiles and their owners. I read the news report on my radio show several days after the ceremony took place. What does it mean for the religious leader of 1 billion people to resign from being the representative of Christ on earth? Does it mean he's lost his faith? Does it mean he's a fraud? What does it mean? Pope has the same job St. Peter had. St. Peter died upside down on a cross before he gave up his job. That says a lot about the job commitment of Pope Benedict. I always thought it was supposed to be a lifetime job. I guess his oath of popery is like a marriage oath. Till death do us part or until we divorce, or in Catholic terms, get annulled. The grand Catholic hypocrisy continues in the grandest pageantry. The Pope resigning means there is no one at the top of the heap of Catholic priests and cardinals, and no one eternally committed to continuing Christ's work and message. The Pope job is just another top-paid, ceremonial, overrated CEO job with a golden parachute. No one knows how much a pope makes in salary. Since the Catholic Church is a Fortune 1 company, his annual salary must be in the trillions of any world currency. I wonder where he will retire to. The Church owns billions of acres and thousands of islands around the world. I'm sure he has a papal retirement villa where he can live in privacy and prayer. I really don't believe it is his health or his age that is the reason for his resignation. I believe it is another major Vatican scandal ready to explode, and this Pope will be right at the center of it. That's what I'm thinking. Another article I wrote this month. It's called Probabilities of Success. And it says, I have never been too concerned with probabilities of success or failure. I find the odds are the same for success and failure if I put as much thought in the possibilities of failure as I do in success. I would rather put all my energy into success of whatever it is I'm creating and let the world decide if they like it or not. If I'm happy with it, that is all that matters to me. The cosmic law of compensation. makes everything understandable if we look carefully at the probabilities of something happening as a direct result of something we do. If I pick up a rock on the ground, I have that rock because I picked it up. If I earn a dollar, I have a dollar or something worth a dollar. Regardless of something, if something is 200 million to one odds of losing, someone might win. Anyone absorbed by the possibilities of losing is destined to lose because of the negativity in their thought process. There are virtually three reasons why someone can work their entire life at developing a skill or a talent and not master it. One, it is only a hobby or interest in developing a skill in fly fishing or music or art or something else. It's for personal amusement. Two, attempting to master something unmasterable. And three, fear of failure will prevent or hinder anyone from starting or finishing something that could be successful. There are two ways I measure success. The first is through my personal happiness, and the second is through a personal achievement. No one has to be a great financial success to be happy in their life. 99% of the world population are not great financial successes. Yet the vast majority of us are happy because of our love for family and friends, and we have achieved many personal goals. The probability of success is high for those who believe it to be high. Probability of failure is also high if we believe it to be high. I fail and achieve things simply by believing or not believing in them, and understanding what is possible and what is not. I have no desire or the capability of a tightrope walk over the Niagara Falls. But Walenda did, and he was successful. But all the probabilities were against him. I may not be so physically daring, but I achieve some things that are important to me. Success doesn't necessarily mean public acceptance of what we have done. It only means we accept and are happy with what we have done. My reward is the confidence, knowledge, and the sense of achievement I receive from completing an article or a picture or a radio show, finish reading a book. Fame and fortune are remote side effects of most achievements, and not the reason for them. That's the way I feel, folks. I can't help it. You know, you got as much of a chance of winning at something as you do of losing, depending on how you look at it. Some things can't be won. You know, the odds are stacked against you for it to happen. But other things can be. Those are the things we have to concentrate upon to be successful in. Back in the 9th, we had a big blizzard up here in the Northeast. I woke up that morning and, saw a foot or two on the ground. And I felt fortunate because others got, 3 feet of snow. That night. But nevertheless, I felt the need to write about this. If you go to my website, you'll notice that I have a tremendous. I've done a lot of. I've put up a lot of pictures. Now, I've created pictures to go along with my articles as well. So if you look at them, I've tried to make it a multimedia experience, but. I hope that I feel that the pictures enhance the story, and shoveling off my car and doorstep. I wrote this on the 9th of this month. I just finished shoveling off my car and doorstep. The blizzard of 2013 was kind to us in the northwest Connecticut. We only got 12 inches of snow, where the rest of the state got up to 36 inches. It was hard enough shoveling a foot of snow, but 3 feet can seriously hurt you. Those snowblowers get clogged up in 3 feet of snow, and hundreds of private snowplowers had been hired by the state to clear the highways and streets along with the 650 snowplows owned by the State Department of Transportation. It might take several days before a private contractor can be available to plow a private driveway. Most New Englanders are prepared for this weather with snow shovels and rock salt and whatever else they use to get rid of snow. But many of the people with long driveways have pickup trucks with snow plows on them or have a contract with a snow plow company for their winters. It is really cold out this morning. It was about 15 degrees and the wind is blowing. The governor closed the entire state highway system at 5:15 a.m. this morning. State plows and police cars are getting stuck in the 3 feet of snow covering the state highways. Reports stated 240 car accidents were reported last night in Connecticut, and the state National Guard was called to duty to help stranded motorists and people without heat or electricity. The storm is clearly over in most of Connecticut, and I didn't lose my lights or power. Luckily, it appears like a normal day after a heavy snowstorm. Other places in New England are devastated by the blizzard and take days to shovel out. And over 36,000 people in Connecticut and many more thousands of people throughout New England are without electricity today. And nature never fails to overwhelm us, humble us, either by its overwhelming power or its beauty. And, just dropped my mouse on the floor for some reason.
Another important thing to get ready before the storm is clothing.
make certain that your boots and heavy coats are available near the front or back door. Also lay out ahead of time what you might want to wear the next day instead of having to look through your drawers or closets in a blackout with a dim flashlight. As I get older, I dread these nor'easters, the geographic areas noted for these storms, or so we should know what to expect. Unfortunately, either most of our population are new to the Northeast, or they are have extremely short memories, because these storms come every year, and the panic prompted by the news media drive people into hoarding and survival mentality, which causes shortages throughout the Northeast in fuel and food. The cost to business and the state and the federal government is astronomical if they have to shut down the state or call out the National Guard to help clear the roads and highways or help communities or individuals who are stranded without power, fuel, or food. We in Connecticut have been through many natural disasters in the last few years, and we all were forewarned. There really is little anyone can do except to wait for it and wait it out. Waiting for a blizzard is nerve-wracking. We can only try to prepare as best we can by having an emergency plan and enough common sense to get what we need in advance of the storm and be off the roads before the storm starts. I'm never fully prepared for a blizzard's severity or length. There is always something I should have gotten or could have used. I add something new to my storm list every year. This year, I added hot cocoa mix and whipped cream. I missed it during last year's nor'easter, and I'm sure there is something else missing in my emergency kit, but I won't really know about it until I miss whatever it is. Have a happy blizzard. And, I think with that, I've got another one that I wrote this year that I thought was a poem. And actually two poems that I would like to read very quickly. One is called Here and Now. I live in the here and now. I create every moment I live. I am here and now, not there and then, not where and when. I am here and now, until I completely ascend. I wrote that on February 6th. And, so these are all on my website, by the way, in February, in the February category. On February 5th, I wrote, Which Way the Wind Blows, the poem observation. No one knows their fate. Great plans for the future can be destroyed by a sudden change of wind. A warm day can turn quickly into a cold and rainy one by the change of the wind. An individual can be awarded a prize for a great achievement, then die the next day in a plane crash or die of a sudden heart attack. That is the cruel reality of life. What happens to us today or tomorrow depends on the power and direction of the wind. There are hurricanes and breezes. We fool ourselves as we go to work or wake up in the morning and follow the same routine we followed the day before. Suddenly we notice how cold and windy it is and change our plans and wardrobe for the day. Weather change results in a reality change. We are like trees, vulnerable to heavy winds and bad weather. Which way the wind blows determines which way we bend. I don't know. of you saw the Super Bowl. Accordingly, over 100 million people did. I don't know if that's true or not. But it was a spectacle. That halftime show was absolutely absurd. Like, absolutely crazy. I call it the Booty Bowl. All Super Bowl watchers last night were forced to watch the Booty Bowl halftime performance play against the performance of the Sandy Hook Children's Choir. Why would any show producer deliberately pair the commemoration choir of the murders of 26-year-old children in Sandy Hook with Beyoncé's sex-riddled performance with 175 sex-driven performers glorifying the championship contest of the most violent physical sport played in the world? The obvious image reflects a satanic ritual ceremony. The Super Bowl hysteria is a mass mind-controlling madness that creates the illusion of an international party, inviting everyone in the world who has a television to be entertained as the Super Bowl promoters flash satanic symbolism everywhere on the TV screen. The NFL and the network media have prostituted themselves and sunk to the level of promoting sex, violence, and Satanism for the last 3 years in their halftime performances. Each year, the satanic tributes become bolder as the price for advertising on the Super Bowl automatically rises astronomically. This year, the price reached $4 million for a 30-second ad to sexually and subliminally assault the Super Bowl audience. The Ravens won the Super Bowl against San Francisco, but before anyone innocently applauds the Ravens' victory, remember that the Raven is an omen of death and is a legendary vessel for demonic spirits. One has to wonder if the Raven victory was predetermined to ensure the outcome of the game would be satanically symbolic, and the subliminal message of satanic victory became embedded in the minds of every Super Bowl viewer. And what I did is I put in a copy on the bottom of this of The Raven, which is Edgar Allan Poe's poem. This talks how the Raven, interesting. And my last poem, essay for tonight that I wrote for the month of February. I have others in January, but I think I've read most of those on the air. But this particular one, I wrote it on February 2nd. Which was the day after that John Kerry was officially sworn in, and then he was ceremonially sworn in about a week or so later. John Kerry's silent swearing-in ceremony. John Kerry was sworn in as Obama's new Secretary of State, replacing Hillary Clinton. This nomination was Obama's worst. I wouldn't be surprised if Kerry paid him for the appointment from his wife's ketchup fortune to try to resurrect his pathetic reputation. After he conceded the 2004 presidential election to his third cousin, the skull and bones brother G.W. Bush, Kerry won the 2004 election by over 3 million votes. But due to election fraud on behalf of the Republican Secretaries of State and the bold election machine fraud, G.W. Bush was announced the winner by the media. 10 senators, including Barack Obama, stood up in the Senate on January 6th of 2005 to denounce the vote count and outcome of the election. Their statements were nationally televised on C-SPAN, and I watched that day. John Kerry did not show up for the public Senate declaration of election fraud. Public Senate declaration of 2004 presidential campaign was harpooned by the Republican swift boat accusations of Kerry's cowardice as a lieutenant and leader of a swift boat crew assigned to patrolling certain rivers in Vietnam. It was also implied in the anti-Kerry campaign that John Kerry was given the award of the Purple Heart for a self-inflicted wound in his buttocks. John Kerry was denounced the U.S. military in public on numerous occasions and was responsible for negotiating a settlement with North Korea for the return and acknowledgement of thousands of NMIA missing in action after the fall of Saigon and the formal end of the Vietnam War. Kerry and his best buddy, Senator John McCain, who was former war prisoner of North Vietnam, many accusations were made by his fellow prisoners that he was a traitor, negotiated an agreement with Vietnam, which dismissed thousands of lives of MIAs and developed the reopening of trade and the country with the country. It was considered a betrayal to the military and a betrayal to all the families whose husbands and sons' deaths were never recognized. Kerry was considered a traitor then, and still considered one by many Americans today. The unanimous approval of the Senate, the silence of the military and the media over Kerry's nomination is a strong omen of the great betrayal of the American people coming soon. I predict John Kerry will sell out the U.S. by negotiating a new world order takeover of the U.S. before the end of Obama's term. Kerry is the only man who could do this. He has little to lose and one of the most despised people in the country. His seething hatred of the American people and military and their hatred for him is why he was appointed. His blood oath to the satanic Yale University fraternity of Skull and Bones, which Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush, and G.W. Bush were all past presidents of, owns his soul. George Bush Sr. has openly stated that his family has worked diligently toward the collapse of the U.S. government for the last century and almost achieved it with G.W. Bush. I condemn the appointment of John Kerry as Secretary of State and publish this article as fair warning to the American people and to people around the world that John Kerry will betray the United States again, as he did in 1971 and in 2004 and during the MIA negotiations. Why should anyone expect anything different from him now? I have two other articles that I attached to this article. One I wrote on January 11th, 2005, which was once I had the details of the redeem the Democratic Party by herself, which is what she tried to do on January 6, 2005. I give her credit for her lonely stand against the great injustice done to the American people in the 2004 election. She displayed the courage expected but rarely exhibited by members of Congress, single-handedly challenging the Ohio vote count. Her speech, unfortunately, was followed by the choir of castrati, Democratic alter boys. They are the most damnable Democrats, Senator Harry Reid, Senator Tom Darkin, Senator Barack Obama, Senator Dick Durbin, Senator Mark Dayton, Senator Ron Wyden, Senator Frank Lautenberg, and last and least, all right, Senator Chris Dodd. And we cannot forget the queen of hypocrisy, Hillary Clinton. These undistinguished members of the democratically concerned Senate are, without without doubt the greatest hypocrites of all time. Anyone who witnessed the weak-kneed debate of these damn Democrats questioning but not challenging the Ohio voter fraud could not help but become outraged. Not even the shithead himself, John Kerry, would challenge the vote. He didn't even show up. If the candidate himself doesn't challenge the obvious election fraud, which cost him the election, then the only excuse for his concession was he was supposed to concede and was never supposed to win in the first place. Everyone knew it except those who voted for him. The election was rigged. This was a scourge on the soul of the nation and will not be forgotten by patriotic Americans and millions of observers throughout the world. The 2004 election was the greatest farce in American history, rivaling the entire theatrical achievements of the Three Stooges. We must recognize that America is not a democracy. America is a plutocracy, ruled by corporations and administered by incompetent yes-men in Congress and in the presidency. The people no longer have a true voice or representative in their government. They will never have unless we rid ourselves of these corporate and political horrors. These damn Democrats and damn Republicans are one and the same. And though this apparent fact is ignored by the nonpartisan, non-informing, non-news media, there is no longer the America we thought it was. There is only un-America, home of the mindless worshippers of the DNC, the RNC, the NFL, the AFL, the NBA, the ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, CNN, etc. The last one I wanted to read, I'll read this one, because I'm just backing up my statements that I made against Kerry. John Kerry Karl Rove's October Surprise. I wrote this on November 1st, 2006, right before the midterm elections. How appropriate, how Rovian it is to have Bush's Skull and Bones brother and third cousin John Kerry suicide bomb the Democratic lead in the midterm election. Has anyone considered the possibility that the Democrats' designated loser, John Kerry, would deliberately insult the American military on the last day of October? Why would he do that, you might ask? Because that is what he does. That is what he is. He's a designated loser. His claim to fame in 1971 was his loser stance of his indictment before the Congress of his fellow soldiers as war criminals in the Vietnam War. In 2004, he decided to run for president. He was the first candidate to announce before the Iowa caucus. He was polled at 25 points behind frontrunner Howard Dean, and he was even running behind Al Sharpton. Suddenly, out of nowhere, Kerry wins the Iowa caucus with the help of the political suicide of Dick Gephardt, and major questions arose from the Iowa caucus upset that have never been answered. 1. What was the deal Kerry made in Iowa? 2. Why was Howard Dean such a threat to the Democrats? Or was he? See my archives for Howard Dean, the Judas Ghost, the Goat article. Howard Dean, the Judas Goat. That's in my 2004, I believe, section. 3. Why did the press jump all over Dean's famous yell and destroy his candidacy? Then Dean was given his current position as head of the DNC. Now remember, I wrote this back in November 06. Okay. Dean was the head of the Democratic National Committee. 4. The fourth question is, what happened to all the money Dean raised and never spent? $90 million was reported earned during his campaign. When he dropped out of the race after the New Hampshire primary, $40 million was reported spent. $10 million went to Joe Trippi as campaign manager, and $30 million was reported spent on the campaign. That leaves $50 million unspent, and according to U.S. campaign laws, the campaign can keep what has not been spent. The candidate can keep what was not spent. 5. What happened to all the money Kerry raised and never spent? $90 million again were raised. Again, only $40 million was reported spent on the entire campaign. What happened to the other money? There are $50 million. Did it go into Kerry's pockets? Yes, it did. It seems that $50 million is the price for a Democratic candidate to concede from a presidential race and throw a presidential election. 6. Why did Kerry immediately concede when he was well aware of the voter fraud in Ohio and Florida? If he would have demanded a recount in either state, he would have exposed the Republican fraud and won the election. But instead, he cowardly conceded with a $50 million in his war chest. I guess that wasn't enough money for him, or else his job for Skull and Bones isn't finished yet. And he runs again in 2008. The sad truth is, there are many idiot Democrats who would send him more money. Kerry was totally complicit in the destruction of the Democratic Party after his statement yesterday. His insistence that he would not apologize is all the proof Americans need to indict him as a traitor to his party and a traitor to America. As for the Democratic Party, they are full of traitors and incompetence of the Republican Party, as is the Republican Party. I dislike and distrust both political parties. I understand the system, and I understand what John Kerry is. He is a culprit of complicity, a skull and bones man, a member of a satanic order founded at Yale for the sole purpose of creating leaders that will bring about the new world order and owe their lives and soul allegiance to the order and the brotherhood. Kerry and G.W. Bush are both frat brothers of skull and bones, as well as third cousins. John Kerry is the designated loser of the Democratic Party. His total career has been designed to disgrace the liberal agenda in American politics and to ensure that there will always be a division in the Senate between those senators who take the oath of office seriously and those who are there to disrupt the proper flow of government. In his 25 years in the Senate, Kerry has done virtually nothing of note other than sponsor and co-sponsor a handful of bills. What is his real purpose in the Senate? Why has Massachusetts continued to re-elect him? Don't the voters of Massachusetts see what the rest of the country sees? Obviously not. Many Connecticut voters refuse to see the insidious behavior of Joe Lieberman, or John Rowland, or Chris Todd, or the incompetence of Jody Rell, our current Republican governor, and her numerous corporate appointees, as well as the congressmen and members of the Democratic-controlled legislature, all the other elected positions held too long by the same people, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Treasurer, and Comptroller. Kerry must be brought to his knees by the American public. They must see him for what he is. After his recent remarks about the intelligence level of the military, I think they do see him for the traitor and fraud that he has been all along. Until the people of this country and the Democratic Party rid themselves of the designated loser menace, George Bush Sr. and Jr. and Kerry and other frat brothers will keep the people of the United States in their death grip. Expose Kerry and Bush for who and what they are, and their hellish hold on America will be released. Expose the criminals in our government and the media who cover their crimes, and our country will be free of their tyranny. Expose the secret societies that infest our government and leech off the blood of the American military, the labor of the American worker, and the treasure of the American people. Kerry is only one of many bloated, well-fed bloodsuckers who have burrowed their way into the flesh and blood of our society and feasted on the infected body of the United States government. Now the once great and strong America is gravely weakened by the crippling diseases of war, corruption, and apathy, and covered with unclean, festering wounds. The leeches will continue their blood fest until only a blood is bought. body remains while Americans, or all Americans, rid themselves of these bloodsuckers who are gravely infecting the soul of our society. So that is why I dislike John Kerry. I really do. And that's about it for that. What I'd like to do is I'd like to end tonight with a couple of great passages from Chu Wang, 4th century BC. Oh, the Great Summons. It says, when Chu Wang had been exiled from this court for 9 years, he became so despondent that he feared his soul would part from his body and he would die. It was then that he made the poem called The Great Summons, calling upon his soul not to leave him. It began this way. Green spring receiveth the vacant earth, the white sun shineth, and spring wind provoketh to burst and burgeon each sprout and flower in those dark caves where winter lurks. Hide not my soul. O soul, come back again, who do not stray. O soul, come back again and go not east or west or north or south. For to the east a mighty water drowneth earth's other shore, tossed on its waves and heaving with its tides. The hornless dragon and the ocean rideth. Clouds gather low and fogs enfold the sea and gleaming ice drifts past. O soul, go not to the east, to the silent valley of sunrise. O soul, go not to the south, where mile on mile the earth is burnt away, and poisonous serpents liveth through the flames. Where on precipitous paths, or in deep woods, tigers and leopards prowl, and water scorpions wait, where the king python rears his giant head, and O soul, go not to the south, where the three-footed tortoise spits disease. O soul, go not to the west, where level wastes of sand stretch on, and demons rage swine-headed, hairy-skinned, with bulging eyes, who in wild laughter gnash projecting fangs. O soul, go not to the west, there where many perils wait. O soul, go not to the north, to the lame dragon's frozen peaks, where trees and grasses dare not grow, where a river runs too wide to cross and too deep to plumb, and the sky is white with snow, and the cold cuts and kills, and a soul seeks not to fill the treacherous void of the north. O soul, come back to idleness and peace, and the quietude and joy the lands of Qing and Chu. There work your will and follow your desire, till sorrow is forgot. And carelessness shall bring you length of days, and O soul, come back to joy beyond all telling. Where 30 cubits high harvest time, the corn is stacked, where pie is so cooked of millet and bearded maize. Guests watch the steaming bowls and sniff the pungency of the peppered herbs. The cunning cook adds slices of bird flesh, pigeon and yellow heron and black crane, and they taste the badger stew. A soul, O soul, come back to feed on foods you love. Next we brought fresh turtle and sweet chicken cooked in cheese, pressed by the men of Chu, and pickled sucking pig, and flesh of whelps floating in liver sauce, and salad of minced radishes and brine, and all served with that hot spice of southern wood, the land of Wu supplies. O soul, come back to choose the meats you love. Roasted dal, steamed widgeon, and grilled quail, on every fowl they fare. Boiled perch and sparrow broth, and each preserved the separate flavor that is most its own. O soul, come back to where such dainties wait. The four strong liquors are warming at the fire, so that they grate not on the drinker's throat. How fragrant rise their fumes, how cool their taste. Such drink is not for louts or serving men, and wise distillers from the land of Wu blend unfermented spirit with white yeast and brew the li of Chu. O soul, come back and let your yearnings cease. Reed organs from the lands of Tai and Chi and Wei and Cheng gladden the feasters, and old songs are sung. And the rider's song that once Fuxi, the ancient monarch, made, and the harp song of Chu. Then, after prelude from the flutes of chaos, the ballad singer's voice rises alone. O soul, come back to the hollow mulberry tree. Eight and eight, the dancers sway, heavy, weaving their steps to the poet's voice, who speaks his odes and rhapsodies. They tap their bells and beat their chimes rigidly, lest harp and flute should mar the measure. They rival singers of the four domains, compete in melody, till not a tune is left unsung that human voice could sing. And O soul, come back and listen to these songs. And women enter those red lips and dazzling teeth, seduce the eye, but meek and virtuous, trained in every art, fit sharers of playtime, so soft their flesh and delicate their bones. O soul, come back and let them ease your woe. They then enter other ladies with laughing lips and sidelong glances on their moth-eyed brows, whose cheeks are fresh and red, ladies both great of heart and long of limb, whose beauty by sobriety is matched, well-padded cheeks and ears with curving rim, high-arching eyebrows as with compass drawn, great hearts and great gestures are their vast waists and necks and slender as the clasp of courtiers' brooches. O soul, come back to those whose tenderness drives angry thoughts away. Last enter those whose every action is contrived to please. Black painted eyebrows and white powdered cheeks, these reek with scent when their long sleeves they brush the faces of the feasters whom they pass, or pluck the coats of those who will not stay. O soul, come back to pleasures of the night. Come back to the pleasures of the night. A summer house with spacious rooms and a high hall with beams. little closet in the southern wing, reached by a private stair, and round the house a covered way through run where houses might be trained. And sometimes riding, sometimes going afoot, you shall explore, O soul, the parks of spring, your jeweled axles gleaming in the sun, and yoke inlaid with gold. Or amid orchards, the sandal trees shall walk in the dark woods. O soul, come back and live for these delights. Peacocks shall fill your gardens, and you shall rear the rock and phoenix and red jungle fowl, whose cry at dawn assembles river storks to join the play of cranes and ibis, where the wild swan all day pursues the glint of vital kingfishers. O soul, come back to watch the birds in flight. He who has found such manifold delights shall feel his cheeks aglow and the blood spirit dancing through his limbs. Stay with me, soul, and share the span of days that your happiness will bring. See sons and grandsons serving at the court, ennobled and enriched. O soul, come back and bring prosperity to house and stock. The roads of this that lead to Chu shall teem with travelers as thick as clouds 1,000 miles away, for the 5 orders of nobility shall summon sages to assist the king, and with godlike discrimination choose the wise in council, by their aid to probe the highest discontents of humble men and help the lonely poor. O soul, come back and end what we began. Fields, villages, and lanes shall throng with happy men. Good rule protect the people and make known the king's benevolence to all the land. Stern discipline prepare their natures for the soft act, caress of art. A soul came back to where the good are praised. Like the sun shining over the 4 seas, shall be this reputation of our king. His deeds matched only in heaven, so repair the wrongs endured by every tribe of men, northward to you and southward to Anam, to the sheep's gut mountain and the eastern seas. O soul, come back to where the wise are sought. Behold the glorious virtues of our king, triumphant, terrible. Behold with solemn face the hall. The 3 grand ministers walk up and down, none chosen for the post save landlords, or in default knights of the 9 degrees. At the first ray of dawn, already is hung the shooting star, where with bow in hand and arrow under arm, each archer does obeisance to each, willing to yield his rights of precedence. A soul comes back to where men honor still the name of the 3 kings. Yu, Tang, and Wen are the 3 justices rulers of antiquity. And with that, I'm going to end tonight's show and refer you, if you can find a book like this, I don't know if it's available anywhere in modern verse, but it's called More Translations from the Chinese by Arthur Whaley. And the other 2 books of his, or the other book of his, is called 170 Chinese Poems, translations by Arthur Whaley, W-A-L-E-Y. Okay. And I want to thank everybody who joined me tonight. And stay tuned for next week. You might want to check next week. Dana Siegel on. His father was the former governor of Alabama and a prosecutor and so on and so forth. His name was Dan now sitting in jail, wrongfully accused by the Bush administration, prosecuted rather by the Bush administration and Karl Rove. And rather interesting case. And you can check that out. You can listen to her and some union issues as well on our last night's show. And so I want to thank everybody who's listened, and appreciate your patience, appreciate you listen, your interest, and join us again next week.